Steph Marr had been around computers long enough to know that a good system administrator knows how to read his machine, and something was wrong with the system at Santa Cruz Operation. A blind church organist can tell how many people are in the church by the way his music sounds, but he probably can't explain how he does it. A good jockey can tell what kind of mood his horse is in, and can often tell how well the horse is going to run by the way it walks to the starting line. A good computer system administrator develops a feel for the patterns and sounds of his computer. When they are aberrant, he always investigates. Computers are supposed to do the same thing over and over again, and when they do something different, there is always a reason. The internal rhythm of a computer is seen in the delays in getting a response to typed keys, the staccato sound of a disk arm rattling, the flickering lights of modems and disk controllers, or the daily routine of log and journal file entries. Named for the Northern California coastal town where the company had its headquarters, Santa Cruz Operation got its start selling a version of the Unix operating system to run on personal computers. In 8 years, Santa Cruz Operation had grown from a father-son consulting startup to a multi-million dollar company. Marr was one of the people who worked to keep Santa Cruz Operation's network of computers up and running. He had been there for a year, long enough to know that certain users not only had certain privileges on the system, but also had individual habits. Engineers logged on from their homes late at night. Secretaries logged on only from work and only during work hours. Steph was sufficiently tuned in to his computer's own circadian rhythms, the times of heavy use and the periodic lulls, to notice an aberration in late May of 1987. Not only did he feel the trouble, but the system was telling him in no uncertain terms that something was going awry. One of the secretaries who used the computer was acting out of character. She was logging in after hours, cruising the system and trying to peek into other people's directories. She was accessing files that had been dormant for many months, including an out-of-date help system. When Steph asked her about it, she professed ignorance. Apparently, someone had ferreted out her password and was blundering around inside SCO's computers. When Steph realized that an intruder had entered the system, instead of immediately trying to throw him out, he set up an alarm system and put limits on what the stranger could do. The trespasser must have felt the presence of someone electronically peering over his shoulder, watching his every move, because a few days after the monitoring started, he typed onto the screen, "Why are you watching me?" "Because it's my job," Steph typed back. Once he had engaged the company in an electronic conversation, the hacker made a request that signified so much audacity that the system administrator knew this was no ordinary intruder. The uninvited guest told Steph that he wanted an account that gave him unlimited privileges throughout the system. By this time, a group of onlookers had formed a half moon around Steph's desk, and a lively debate ensued over whether or not Steph should give him an account on the company computer. Steph believed his own experience as a hacker on the edge of the law gave him a better understanding of just what motivated this person. In his younger days, Steph had done his share of system cracking. As a college student, his favorite pastime was to slide past the security on university computers, then call the system administrators to inform them of what he had done before they discovered it. He, too, believed in free access to information. But Steph also knew when to stop. He believed in exercising restraint and respecting someone else's right to run a computer system without having to build elaborate safeguards against outsiders. There was something about this person's attitude that made Steph sense that he knew he was breaking the law, and was perhaps even proud of his trespass. A high-level account was out of the question. If Steph gave him such power over other users, and if he was clever enough, the intruder would be able to change the machine's operating system, or even do something as patently malicious as depriving others of the use of the computer. If he wanted to, he could become the electronic equivalent of a mad gunman in a bank holding the computer hostage. Finally, Steph decided to give him an account that masqueraded as something more powerful than it actually was. This account was called Hacker, a label of the intruder's own choosing. In setting up an account for him, to which Steph also had full access, Steph figured he was erecting an aquarium in which he could watch every move of the felonious fish. Moreover, letting him lounge around on the computers would make it easier to trace his calls. Within 48 hours, Pacific Bell Security was doing just that. But when Pacific Bell Security investigators started to trace one call, they discovered that somehow the trespasser was wily enough to get access to the phone company computers themselves and block certain commands requesting information about the line he was using. Despite the long hours the intruder was dedicating to wandering through the SCO computer, he appeared to have no discernible quest. He seemed merely to like to prowl through the system, checking out directories, but seldom opening files themselves. But after a week or so, the hacker's probing seemed more directed. He fastened on to programs that would allow someone to modify the operating system. But he didn't have the necessary privileges to do so. It was clear after a while that he seemed to have a particular goal of modifying Xenix, a derivative of Unix operating system and the crux of the company's business. More disturbing was his apparent goal of transmitting a copy of Xenix to his own computer. But the owner of the hacker account gave himself away. The simple oversight that exposed him lay in his use of MCI to gain access. A special MCI feature automatically identified the telephone from which the trespasser's call to the local MCI access number was placed. It was a telephone in Thousand Oaks, California.